He is Amit Kaur. I am Telly Concepcion. And together, we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys discuss The Last Dance, episodes 7 and 8, Michael Jordan versus Steve Kerr, plus MJ versus the media. They also go beyond the numbers of the Scottie Pippen-led Chicago Bulls of the 93-94 NBA season and discuss whether a championship during that time would have changed the perception of MJ's legacy. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number for the day is 3.9 million. There are estimated 3.9 million college students set to graduate in 2020 in the U.S., and many more high school students. I just couldn't find the number. But shouts out to you guys. You all worked really hard to graduate, and to not get to walk, I know, is devastating. We salute you. Keep grinding.
My number for the day is zero, as in zero hits, a no-hitter. 2010, Edwin Jackson of the then played for the Diamondbacks, played the Rays on June 25th. He pitched 9 innings. He allowed 0 hits, but he did manage 8 walks, of which one was hit by pitch, and he had a total pitch count of 149 pitches, which happens to be the most number of pitches thrown by any pitcher in the past decade.
For our first story, we go beyond the numbers of the lost NBA, the NBA without Michael Jordan, more specifically the 1993-94 Chicago Bulls led by Scottie Pippen. Numbers 55, 7, and 1. The Chicago Bulls managed a record of 55 and 27 with Scottie Pippen at the helm. 7 for Game 7 with your New York Knicks on it, and 1 Scottie won All-Star MVP. He was first-team All-NBA and All-Defensive first-team as well. We've covered this for the last couple of episodes here on the Beyond the Numbers podcast, but in episode 4, we covered Jordan in the 80s before championships, and we covered his first three-peat with the Bulls. In episode 5, we covered Michael's retirement and went beyond the numbers of his baseball career. In episode 6, we covered a second three-peat and gave our commentary on The Last Dance. And in episode 7, we went beyond the numbers of his time with the Wizards after he had retired with the Bulls after a second three-peat. But by popular demand, a lot of people were asking what happened in the NBA when he left and what happened specifically with the Chicago Bulls when he left.
So on his own, with no Jordan to kind of take the lead, Scottie led the Bulls to 55 wins that season, which is only 2 less than they did with MJ the year before.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, Scottie definitely doesn't get enough credit. I think you'll agree on this one, Amit, just because he had Michael there and he was pretty much in Michael's shadow for most of the time. But this was his season to kind of be the man. And although they had very different personality and leadership types, Scottie was no bum on the basketball court. And he showed off his skills against the best players in the game at the 93-94 All-Star game, where he put up 29 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 steals. So he put up a double-double and used that stage as his own personal playground. Not only did he lead the Eastern Conference to a 127-118 win over the West, he ends up winning MVP of the All-Star game. For that season, Scottie Pippen, for the entire 93-94 season, Scottie's averages were 22 points a game, 8.7 rebounds a game, 5.6 assists per game, and 2.9 steals in 38.3 minutes. So he was definitely the leader of the Bulls and one of the leaders in the Eastern Conference. He got the Bulls to the playoffs, Amit, where they swept the Cavs in the first round, but happened to meet your New York Knicks in round two, the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Yeah, the Knicks in the early 90s were not bad. You know, we talked about them wanting to kind of take that mantle from the Bad Boy Pistons in the early 90s. So, you know, the Bulls hit the Knicks up. It's a seven-game series. Scotty did manage to lead the Bulls with 21 points. Even with that, the Knicks led 2-0. The Bulls come back, make it a 2-2 series. Knicks take a 3-2 lead. And then, Tully, game six. Game six. What happens in game six? Oh,
the dunk heard around the world.
That's right.
Dunk heard around the world.
That's right. So for those of our followers who don't know, what happened? What was that dunk, Tully?
Man, so actually, let's take it back one step. So against the Cavs, Scotty refused to come in for the last 1.4 seconds of the game because Coach had drawn up a play for Tony Kukoc. All was forgiven. They cried in the locker room, and this is all covered in The Last Dance. So what does Scotty do? He exerts his dominance on the New York Knicks, and more specifically, Patrick Ewing, when he comes down on a fast break, dunks on Ewing, proceeds to push him all the way down, and does the step over Ewing as Ewing tries to push him off. He runs down the court, points right at none other than Spike Lee, giving him like a, I'm coming for y'all, and led the Bulls to a game six win to push to game seven.
But, of course, the Knicks managed to win at the Garden, 87-77. And they ended up, you know, this wasn't the Eastern Conference Finals, so they ended up going to the Eastern Conference Finals, where the Indiana Pacers pushed into seven games, but they won that series. And then they went to the NBA Finals, where they got to meet Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets. And they did end up losing.
They made it. They made it.
They made it, but they lost. You know, we talked about all those guys that didn't get rings because of Jordan, and here's your chance. Mike's gone. You got a chance to sneak in and get the ring. And, of course, they lose to the Rockets in the finals. And, of course, both of us thought, hey, did the Knicks ever make it to the finals since then? Yeah, they did again. They lost to the San Antonio Spurs in 99. Tim Duncan was the MVP of that series. So I think the general sense we have is, if the Knicks are going to go to the finals, they need to not play any team from the state of Texas.
Don't mess with Texas. Y'all slitty slickers coming down here trying to win you an NBA championship need to get on.
That's right.
Something like that. That's what I'm imagining.
Something like that.
Something like that. So, yeah, so our question here really, you know, this is the shape of the NBA. Can guys say that, Amit, like, Michael kept me from a ring? Can Ewing say that? He had his chance with the Michael-less league.
Yeah, but who wins the 1 year he's gone? The first pick of that draft.
The first pick of Michael's draft.
The first pick of Michael's draft.
You know who else was on that team? Clyde Drexler.
That's right.
His teams. After Mike kept him from winning, he went on to win towards the end of his career with those Rockets teams. So, you know, Houston ends up winning back-to-back championships in Mike's absence. And, you know, the question was really, when Michael stepped away, did Pippen step up? And boy, did he. He was the leading vote-getter for the All-NBA first team. He was NBA All-Defensive first team. He ranked eighth in the league in scoring, as we mentioned, 22 points a game, 23rd in rebounding, 8.7 a game, 19 in assists, and second in steals, only behind Nate McMillan of Seattle. Pippen also finished third in NBA MVP voting behind Hakeem Olajuwon, who won it, and David Robinson, who came in second. So the big question, Amit, had the Bulls won, had Scottie Pippen gotten past your Knicks in game seven, gotten past the Pacers and won a championship, how would that change Michael's legacy?
I mean, I think it's any time a superstar leaves, how their team does without them says a lot, right? So I think if they were to win a championship without him, I don't think it takes anything away from the three championships he had at that point. But I think it definitely also states, hey, this was a really good Bulls team that he, you know, put over the top.
Yeah, I'll have to take the other side of that a little bit and just push back and say, if they had won without him, does he come back to the NBA, right? Like, is it a challenge? Because he was always looking for challenges. Number two for me really is, then it's kind of like you plug him in and they win. So it kind of diminishes the legacy of like Jordan's undefeated in finals. The Bulls couldn't get there without him. And I think it made his myth even larger that they couldn't get there without him. And also look at Kevin Durant with Golden State, right? When Golden State won championships, they beat him. He goes to Golden State. So he just didn't get the credit that he felt he deserved because he was joining a winner already.
Yeah, but conversely, you can also look at it and say the teams that he had for the first three, very different than the teams he had for the second three.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about that.
So, I mean, and the way the Bulls were being run as an organization, who knows who would have stayed or who would have gotten tossed based on if they kept winning.
Yeah.
I think the other argument is if he never left, how many would they have won? Would they have won eight? Would they have won both years?
I think so, because I don't think those Rockets team, I mean, they had easily beat that Knicks team the year before. The Magic were the Eastern Conference champions the following year when Jordan made his return. And you can argue if Jordan was to full speed and strength, they beat that Magic's team because he showed flashes of what he could do. And as we covered, he had to get back in shape from baseball. So you could argue they maybe win eight in a row. Now, do they keep the hunger? Do they lose the hunger? Do they lose the fire? Do they get Dennis Rodman, who they had to get after they lost to the Magic because they lost Horace Grant and the Magic beat them up inside with Horace Grant and Shaq? Do they make those moves? Those questions remain, but I feel like MJ would have found a way to get it done and they win eight in a row. If he doesn't retire the second time, this team could have won 10 in a row. Who won in 99? The Spurs won in 99.
But if he spent
winning 10 in a row.
If he spent, right? If he at the end of that says, I'm done, I'm out, right? And you can argue that his father's death had something to do with it, right?
Of course.
In terms of the emotional piece of it. But he also said, hey, that was the plan. After 93, I was out. I was done. I didn't have any left in the tank. I was out, right? Yeah. Whether they won or not, whatever that was. So I don't know what you get the following year.
Yeah, and if your father is not murdered, does he continue with baseball? We went down the numbers of that. Michael was good enough to get to the league, and does he, you know, continue with his baseball career and get to the majors? Had MLB not had a work stoppage, right?
if they didn't have a work stoppage, he wouldn't have left. Yeah. It would have changed everything.
It would have. It really would have, including the end of Space Jam, because at the end of Space Jam, and the spacecraft land on the field. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, it's Michael Jordan, and he walks off, you know.
You're right. The Space Jam accuracy is important in this situation. I agree.
Our second story, we discuss episode 7 of The Last Dance. Way to go, Craig, is how we get the intro to this episode, Amit, with Craig Sager asking Jerry Krause, what's up with all the backstabbing going on? And Jerry Krause storming off.
Yeah, it was definitely a heated beginning to the episode. It's funny, like when you think about sports back in that time, and you know when we were younger, these are the pieces that you don't ever see, right? You saw the games. I don't even think you saw the post game, pre game, any of that stuff. You miss all that. All you catch is what happened on the court. So going back and kind of seeing these little pieces of how people were snippy and the types of questions being asked was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I feel like it's stuff that would go viral now, right? Like there'd be a music video with Way to Go, Craig, playing in the background, and you'd see the eye roll from all the other reporters. and SportsCenter would lead off with like Jerry Krause, GM of the Bulls, storms off when asked a question. And maybe back then they just didn't cover these things so much. Like you said, we saw highlights of the game. You didn't really see too much of the press conference before, after a press interaction. You know, now somebody pulls out their Instagram or Facebook live stream and you get all of it. Yes. So that was interesting to see that little behind the scenes and how pissed the other reporters really, really were because they didn't get to ask any questions that day.
It's true.
So the episode starts out on that light note. Jerry Krause storms off, says there's no backstabbing, says the Bulls are extremely professional, made up of professional guys. But in this episode, you know, we get more details into Michael Jordan's father's death. And we also go into details into his retirement decision. And it broke actually during a White Sox game, which was crazy. And I didn't realize that at the time.
Yeah, it's weird. I at no point, I know they had it planned out, but I don't think they ever explained how it leaked. They just said it leaked somehow.
Yeah, and the irony of it leaking during a baseball game, during a Chicago White Sox game, during, you know, Mike throws out the first pitch that game, and now, you know, fast forward, he's trying to play baseball at that time, unbeknownst to them. It breaks during the game, and he peels out in the seventh inning of that game. So there was a couple other things you noticed about the retirement of it that you hadn't necessarily noticed before. The way it replays in my head is from Space Jam, right? He gets asked if he wants to play, and he says, no, my dream's to play baseball. And my dad got to see my last game, and that's the good that'll come out of this. But you caught a couple other things during that time.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is I didn't realize that he left the door open to come back to play.
Right?
And it wasn't like a coded message, or maybe he was like, hey, maybe in a year or two I come back, whatever happens, happens sort of thing.
Yeah, and he definitely said, like, you know, that may be the challenge I need. I'm bored now, basically, the way it read. I'm bored now. There's no more challenge left for me here in the NBA, but maybe I need to get away from it. And when I come back, it'll be harder for me to do, and I'll do it, which is pretty much exactly what ended up happening.
Yeah, and I don't know if he was bored. I mean, from everything that we've researched and everything we've seen, you know, he was kind of tired in 92. We've kind of been through this on the past few podcasts, kind of going through that whole the grind of the game, the expectations, all of that. But it's always funny that he stayed because he wanted to win three in a row because no one else did. And he did that, and it was like, all right, check that off my list. Let's move on.
Yeah, and bored probably wasn't the appropriate word to use there, but I think he had played up to his competition. He'd slayed his dragons. He beat the guys he was looking to beat. And exhaustion, like you said, he was just tired. And you could see that in 92 and definitely in 93. And the only reason he didn't retire, like you said, three in a row. Larry Bird didn't win three in a row. Magic Johnson didn't win three in a row. Isaiah Thomas didn't win three in a row. And we know how competitive Mike was, that he wanted to have one to hold over your head, right? He just wanted to have that edge, that trash talk that he could talk the rest of his life if he stepped away from the game, to separate himself from his competition, his peer group as he saw it. And also the Olympics, you know, he made a commitment to the Olympics. So he stayed 92 and then he ended up coming back for the season 93. He had a conversation with his dad about walking away, retiring. And his dad, he said in one of the last conversations he had with his dad, they talked about baseball and his dad said, go for it. And his dad wanted him to do it. And like you said, Jerry continues to pay his whole salary, his full Bulls salary while he's playing baseball. And we learn another nugget that we didn't know. The only reason Mike was put into AA baseball, which as you explained in our baseball podcast covering Michael Jordan's baseball career, was because single A couldn't handle the media. They didn't have enough space for fans or media. So Michael gets thrown into the highest level of competition at the minor league level.
Yeah, how crazy is that? Like the press is so large, we can't have you at an earlier developmental league. You gotta come here. That's the only thing that I think we did not cover two or three weeks ago when we went through all that. And that was one of those, that was new to me.
So Mike gets thrown into the highest level of minor league baseball competition that he can be thrown into. So basically it was a recipe for disaster. It was essentially you know, a death sentence for his baseball career. What does he do? He shows up, he shows out, and he starts his minor league game, as we mentioned in the previous podcast, with a hit streak on it.
So, and this is where it was different from what I had researched and what they had said. So they said he started with a 13-game hit streak. He actually had a 13-game hit streak once they hit the road. He started off abysmally. He is batting, I think, like 106 to start his first six games. And then once they hit the road, he goes on that 13-game hit streak, boosts his batting average up to, if I'm correct, 372. And then, you know, as they said in the episode, pitchers figured it out. No fastballs in the zone, nothing but breaking balls and off-speed stuff, making him chase.
Yep, and it's a phone conversation with BJ that gets Michael back into basketball and a little bit of trash talk. So he calls up BJ, he's like, let's have lunch. He's like, dude, I have practice. Like, what are you talking about? Long story short, Michael shows up to the facility and BJ's trash talk basically gets Michael back in the league and gets him into trouble later on, which we'll definitely cover. But he says, you don't have it. You can't shoot. You can't play no more. Michael starts playing a little bit and he gets the itch back, combined with, as we covered in BTN 05, Beyond the Numbers episode 5, where we talk about Michael Jordan's baseball career. The Major League Baseball lockout during that time pushes us to having Michael back in the NBA. And we learn also some of his coverage during his baseball career was not favorable at all, including Sports Illustrated, who was basically saying he did it just for fun and was using his fame to leverage that into a baseball career of sorts. And we know Mike could hold a grudge. He ends up never talking to Sports Illustrated ever again after they do that story, because they never talked to him about the story. They never got his side of the story and why he decided to play or pursue baseball at all.
Yeah, that's a weird one still. And I know that the writer of that specific article did end up coming back out a couple of months ago, I think, and he wrote another article kind of revisiting that entire piece and kind of putting a little more context and essentially praising Michael in it. And that's one of the writers and articles we referenced in episode 5 Beyond the Numbers. That's where a lot of those quotes and numbers came from.
We learn also that Michael got most emotional, not about the parts about his father, the unfair treatment by the media, the accusations that he was somehow involved in his dad's murder, which I can't even imagine losing a parent and being accused of being involved or some of your habits contributing to that. But Michael got most emotional talking about how he held himself to the highest standard and what he did to bring his teammates along in the cost of being the best.
When Michael left, I think Scotty got the sort of the better treatment and sort of the better response from his team, because Michael had that bad cop mentality of beat you down, beat you down. You know, if you're not going to win my way, I'm going to make you feel terrible. You know, he was going to beat and pretty much ridicule you into greatness, or at least to bring you to the level he needed you at. And Scotty, you can tell just by how he talks, he wasn't that guy.
Yeah, and Michael talked about it like he was going to pull you along, right? Like he knew what he needed and what moments he needed it. And, you know, I can speak from experience that there's some guys that are just, they're going to pull you along whether you want to go or not. You know, it's sit or get off the pot, you know, the expression there. So they were definitely making guys better by blunt force because they knew exactly what it took. They knew the toughness. He knew the mentality and he was going to bring some guys along. And for some guys, it worked. And for others, not necessarily. And those aren't the guys you want around when you're building a championship team and a championship culture. And he was asked, you know, at the expense of being considered a nice guy, we know Mike would talk to kids, provide his autograph, grant Make-A-Wish Foundation, you know, donate some of his money to different causes. But that's not what's at the forefront of people's minds when they think of Michael Jordan, especially during his playing time. And he had a great quote regarding that. And people are going to say this and say he wasn't a nice guy. he may have been a tyrant, but like Michael said, that's you because you never won anything. And I wanted to win, and I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. And he just felt like he had to drag people along, and that's what he did.
And for him, it seemed like so much of a commitment. Like, he talks about fulfilling his duty to his team, to the city. And so it was, and we'll go into this probably a little bit in the next episode, a little bit as well, but it was, you know, you have to give all you have every time you're out there, because that's what people are paying to come see. And he wanted to be his best every moment of every game.
Yeah, and that comes with a price. And there's a cost to be the boss. And Michael paid that cost. And I think now The Last Dance is kind of his opportunity to share his side of the story to some extent and explain to people, you know, why he did what he did. And I think his daughter this week tweeted out, now she understands. Now she understands her father. Can you imagine? Now she kind of gets what was fueling him, what was motivating him, why he was the way he was, why he's portrayed the way he is in the media, why people, you know, love to hate this guy and love to love this guy at the same time. Michael Jordan is one of the few sports figures who could be both hero and villain at the same time. So I can't wait for us to get into the next episode of The Last Dance, where they dive into this a little deeper. For our final story today, we discuss episode 8 of The Last Dance. And Amit, they all kind of run together, but I would say these two episodes were two of the best. I think the whole series has been. I think we were talking about Michael Jordan and baseball, and there's some fun nuggets as far as pay is concerned, because Jerry Krause felt, well, he felt Michael was not paid enough during his playing days. And when Michael retired, he decided to continue paying him his full Bulls salary to play baseball.
Yeah. So he made this big deal about, you know, let's make sure we pay Michael, because Michael's been underpaid. So we're just going to keep paying him, right? To kind of look like the good guy. Hey, I'm this good guy. I really care about the guy. I'm going to keep paying him. So when Michael's gone, who takes over the Bulls? Scottie Pippen, right? So for that year that Michael's playing minor league baseball, the Bulls continue to pay him $4 million to not play ball, right? Scottie Pippen's leading the Bulls.
Scottie's NBA All-Star, MVP of the All-Star game, defensive first team, All-NBA that season.
$3 million for his efforts.
It's a crime. Crime. Blasphemy.
and like I said in the last, you know, the last segment, it's so interesting that I'm not going to renegotiate with you once you're in contract.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to keep paying you when you neg out of your contract. Right? Essentially, if you retire, you're essentially saying, yeah, I'm not down to fulfill my contract, but you keep paying me. But here I am sitting here, definitely got underpaid, not touching it though. So,
and like you mentioned, you know, he left the door open for coming back from retirement. So how much of this is the Bulls saying, okay, we're going to keep paying you. If you come back to us, right? We're doing right by you. When you come back, you know, we want you back. We never stop paying you. We never stop loving you. Come back to the team, you know?
BJ trash talks Mike, pulls him back in. They go a little one-on-one. Mike gets the itch back. So we jump into this episode, and what's going on? What stood out to you? Because I'm going to be honest, that Hornets series, man, BJ Armstrong, come on now.
BJ should have known better. He should have known better. He was there. He was there when they beat the Cavaliers. He was there when Mike hit the shot. He was there when Mike switched from right to left on the Lakers and won his first championship. BJ was there for all of these moments. He was there getting yelled at, as we've learned in this episode. He knows what Michael Jordan is about. He knows that Michael Jeffrey Jordan is a tyrant in practice and holds his team to the highest standard. And also, Amit, that Michael finds any type of motivation. So why did he fist bump after he made the shot to beat the Bulls? Why? All he had to do was quietly walk off the court, give Mike his props and say, today was my day.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane to me why at this point, right, he's been in the league long enough where people should kind of know his MO.
Yeah,
and I'll say. They just didn't. And it's just a continued thing. So what really got me, so that was classic, right? But the Bradford Smith story, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Greatness finds its edges in different places. And apparently Mike was straight up making up stories to get himself going.
Come on, dude drops 37 points in a game and his response is to drop 36 and a half?
Yeah, well, first off, let's rewind. Does anyone out there know who LeBradford Smith is? I didn't think so, right? it's not like he did this to, like, Isaiah Thomas was talking about me, or Larry Bird said some off-putting comment, or Gary Payton said, no. This is LeBradford Smith. Had a great night. Everything he was shooting was going in. And Mike was like, you know what? I'm going to show this guy. And all he said was, nice game, Mike, after the game, which turns out not even being true. It's not even true. Also, what's wrong with saying nice game? What's wrong with saying nice game?
Yeah, it's that mental game with him. But I thought, that just to know that, like, how good are you where you can just turn it on that level?
Yeah, that's mastery. That's mastery at its core, mastery of a subject. Like, he was a master of basketball. He had his doctorates in it, and he could do whatever he wanted to do on the court, and he just needed the motivation, the itch, someone telling him he can't do this, he can't do that. He's lost it, and he can turn it on, like you said, to the fullest of his abilities.
Tell you, I could turn on NBA 2K20 right now, start a game, and I could tell you, Tully, I'm going to drop 36 in the first half of this game and not do it most of the time.
Yeah. You and me both.
So it's crazy. It's the only comparison I can think of that, like, to another sport, and I think this is, it's kind of a stretch, but it's Peyton. When you used to watch Manning play regular season, postseason Peyton was a little different. That's kind of where he differentiates from others. But Peyton in the regular season was just like, it was like a grown man playing against kids.
Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, that was the squad right there.
But he
was the team you picked on Madden, and you did all go routes, and you counted a three, and you hit X, and it was a touchdown every time.
but that's that level of, like, just they're on a completely different plane, and they dictate what happens. They dictate outcomes almost.
Yeah, and I'll take the other side of that coin and say they controlled that by their study and pursuit of greatness, right? Yeah. And there's a cost to that. And I think in the documentary, they've done a great job of showing that cost. You can't go out of your hotel room. You're one of the most famous people on earth. And also the cost of the ridicule on the other side when you're not successful in baseball. When they put you on the cover of Sports Illustrated, missing the ball by a foot, you know, when you return to basketball and people are saying, oh, he's tired, number 45 isn't number 23. You know, the extra ridicule that comes along with being the best. And then the extra work when you want to back up the talk. And not everybody's willing to put in that work. Like Kevin Hart has that famous quote, everybody want to be famous, nobody want to put the work in.
Yep.
So I think that's very true. That holds very true.
Yeah, so we see him kind of really take on this obligation that he has to be the best. And I'm intrigued to see, you know, if we have an NBA season if we finish the NBA season this year, you know, everyone's watching this, right? NBA Twitter is pretty much the entire league just commenting every 30 seconds of whatever's happening.
Yes.
Right. If you're on Twitter during any of these episodes, it's as if you're all in the same movie theater together watching this, because it is crazy. But I think there's moments like this where, you know, guys hear that and they think, like, can I take that energy into the season? Can I change how I approach the game? And it'll be interesting to see, you know, with all the load management and sort of the trying to play basketball the smart way, if some guys kind of take this on. Because I think the one player in our generation, and I say our generation, the one guy that stands out to me that kind of played like that was Kobe.
Yeah, it was definitely Kobe.
All out every day. Pain, no pain. Oh, I tore my Achilles. I'm gonna still go shoot those free throws. Like, that was him. And to see the impact of it'll be interesting to see if this actually impacts the guys on the court.
Yeah, and I think the mental aspect of it is huge, because it's that mental Mamba mentality. Rest in peace to Kobe Bryant. You know, he didn't care if people liked him. And we're seeing now Michael was the most famous athlete on earth. Gatorade, McDonald's, you know, his own brand with Jordan brand, with Nike, et cetera. And at the same time, he cared not at all who liked him. Like, the polar opposite of what you would think. And to your point of Kobe had the same mentality, I would argue the arguments between LeBron and Michael, you know, they stopped there, because I think LeBron wants people to like him. He wants to have the personality. He wants to make stands. And he does a lot of social work. And like Michael said, there's a cost. There's a cost associated with being the best. There's a cost with dragging teammates with you. There's a cost to punching teammates in the chest and hitting guys in the face. You get to hoist the trophy at the end, but who's there with you, right? Yeah. And I think that's the big difference between the two of them. And you see Kobe had the same mini Mike. Well, I won't even call him mini Mike. I don't want to be disrespectful, but he considered Michael a mentor. And that's where he got his attitude, his outlook, and his mentality was from bugging Mike into being his mentor.
No, that's completely fair, and it makes sense. And to see that work ethic come into play, when we see him shooting a film, right? He's coming back. Let's make Space Jam. I thought it was hilarious to see how outlandish, like, the reporters thought Space Jam was. Yeah, Mike's gonna be in a movie with Bugs Bunny. You heard me correctly.
Yeah,
and it's about a group of aliens that want to play basketball. And guess who comes and shows up? But Michael Jordan. What are the chances? So, like, kind of have like sort of that backhanded, like, this sounds kind of dumb. What's this gonna be about? But to see. Right, so we kind of all knew about the making of it, and in some cases, I think there's been a lot out there about the entire facility that he made, you know, that entire, like, dome structure tent where he had his whole workout facility. But the cool part about this is Mike entering into this season, into this part of his career, he's come off of baseball, right? He, you know, you had that rough ending to that season, that partial seven games in the playoffs that he played, right? And now he's got to reconstruct his entire physique to be basketball ready, right?
Yeah, and completely different.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to hear people, like, it's funny to hear him say, like, God, you're not ready. Like, whole different setup. Like, yeah, you could play baseball with that, but you can't do this with that body. And he's athletic in both, right? He didn't, like, gain 50 pounds and just sat around for a year, 2 years, right? But it's just, like, the way your body works is so different. So he's got to build himself up. So he's got the weight room, and he's trying to reshape. And tell me, what is he doing at this point to get ready for the season? What do we learn about that kind of I thought was crazy? And I wonder if the guys that were a part of this kind of look back to that and say, damn, that's what he was doing?
First of all, shouts out to Tim Grover, the trainer, Michael Jordan's trainer. But second of all, that's when you know you're on a whole nother level, Amit. I call you up and I'm like, yo, let's get together, let's play. You know what I'm saying? I'm coming back. I just want to play, you know, 5-on-5 casually. We're friends, right? We're cool. and Mike secretly recording you, checking out your moves, checking out who put on weight, checking out who does turnaround jumpers, checking out who favors going to their right hand, who favors going to their left. He is scouting you the whole time so he can come back, take over the league, have another three-peat, and throw the deuces on you guys. Why did they go?
But like, it turned into a thing. Like, it was like, hey, we gotta go play with Mike. That's kind of fun. He's shooting this movie. He's got this big compound. Let's go shoot around with Mike, right? You saw Reggie Miller. Reggie's like, I don't even know how he did it. He's shooting a film all day, and then he's playing basketball with like the best in the league at night. Like, how is he doing this?
That is gangster. To me, that was really, really next level gangster, because it was life imitating art and art imitating life. So in Space Jam, towards the end, you know, he gives the guys their powers back, essentially. He hands them the ball, tells them to touch it, their powers are back. Charles Barkley looks back and says, Mike, I bet you can't play no more, which is pretty much how we learn it happens, right? Like, BJ does the same thing to Mike in real life. Mike, I bet you can't shoot no more. He starts shooting around. Next thing you know, they're running scrimmages. They're doing practices in the gym. And Mike's like, you know what? These guys aren't as good as I thought. I still got it. You know, this guy's doing this. And apparently he was obsessed with Latrell Sprewell at the time. He thought he mirrored his game the most. He had Juwan Howard playing with them there. He had, you know, all the top guys in the league coming through. He had movie stars coming through, the director of the movie coming through, and he's taking notes on his competition for the next couple of years. And the schedule was crazy. It reminds me of college, but it was crazy to choose to do this. But essentially, Mike would get up at 6 a.m, work out, film during the day. They would film Space Jam. Then from like 6 p.m. to 10, 11 o'clock at night, he was playing pickup basketball with the guys. And then he would work out after that. He would do his weight training, and then he'd do it again the next day.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy, crazy process. But, you know, because of that mentality, that's what he took into the season, right? That's the intensity and the focus. And you hear Steve Kerr talk about it. But, you know, I was significantly disappointed that we had no video footage of the Steve Kerr, Michael Jordan incident. And to Steve Kerr's point, like, I agree that it probably definitely added to the respect piece and all of that, and probably made that relationship stronger. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, Mike was letting out some steam based off of what was going on and how they looked when he came back in. But I thought the great quote from that is, I wanted them to understand what it was like to be in the trenches. If you don't understand, you're not going to be ready when the war comes. And so it was like, guys, like, this isn't fun. This isn't, there's no joking around. We are here with one purpose, one mission. I would have to, as I think about it, a lot of what he talks about seems like the Patriots way. The Bill Belichick, we're not here to have fun. We're here to do a job.
Yeah, similar, yeah.
And I kept hearing that in my head. I was like, man, this is, you know, don't believe in the hype, right? Like, that poster that the Patriots have up in their locker room, like,
yep.
Drown out the, like, keep out the noise, drown out the, whatever that was. I can't even think about what it says. But it is all about results, and it's all about focus, and it's all about, you're here, this is your job. So go make sure you're performing your job at your highest level.
Shout out to Steve Kerr, who's a huge Beyonder, listens all the time. So we got to shout Steve Kerr out right here. And yeah, the respect that he gained, Michael Jordan is the number one athlete in the world, comes back, and he felt like these guys, the new guys, Steve Kerr included, were entitled. Like, you guys didn't earn, you weren't here when the Bulls sucked. You didn't earn these championships that are hanging in the banisters. And so they had a sense of entitlement. But when you don't back down on them, and I can speak to this, you know, from a personal perspective, but it's the same in football. You seek out the new guys. And I can tell you, in 2006 with the Florida Gators, Urban Meyer recruited the number one class in the nation. And these guys came in hot. You know, they were riding high, and rightfully so. But they came in riding high, and the seniors and the upperclassmen quickly put them in their place and said, you guys aren't anything until you earn it. You're not Gators yet. You guys are just stepping on campus. And so there's a delicate balance. And I think you need both to win a championship. That's what happened at that time with the Gators. And that's what happened here with the Bulls. You need that new, fresh blood, new energy coming in. But you also need the older guys to come in and step in line. And, you know, for Steve Kerr to stand up to the number one athlete in the world, Mike knew this guy is not in awe of me. This guy does not, like, think I'm above anybody else. This guy looks at me as a guy, and that's somebody that I can run with. And I think that's the ultimate level of respect that you can pay to somebody on that level.
I agree. And I think, so you look at that, and then you look at this, you look at how they approach this season. So I think it's crazy that Pippen could look at a schedule and say, oh yeah, I don't see us losing for the next 3 months. Like, this is the NBA.
Yeah.
This is the NBA. How do you look at a schedule and be like, yeah, we're going to be fine? Like, I don't think the Warriors knew that they were going to go 73-9.
No, but they were definitely playing for it, though.
They were.
Steve had the blueprint, right? Steve had the blueprint from living it with the Bulls and coaching it with the Warriors. And again, we don't talk about this season, but you continue to bring it up. It does not count. They didn't win 73 games. They won nothing that season. They did nothing. They had a good year, and that was it. That year is lost to me. But I think one of the funniest, just to take it back to social media, one of the funniest things on Twitter, and we retweeted this on Beyond TN Podcast, our Twitter handle, was, you know, the internet is savage. And we get to a part where Michael's looking at an iPad at some comments Gary Payton made. Well, somebody dubbed in LeBron James saying, you know, when I blocked that shot and beat the 73-win Warriors, I was the best player of all time. And they dubbed in Michael Jordan looking at the iPad and just laughing and saying, okay, that's real cute right here. Here, take this iPad back before I lace my sneakers back up and show this kid what's up.
If we've gotten anything from this documentary series or docuseries, it's some pretty great memes and GIFs of Jordan.
Yes, good ones. Not crying Jordan anymore. I think he's getting past that one now.
Well, we had the two crying Jordans, right?
Yeah.
You admit to the second one. But we've got some good ones now. This is going to be years and years. We're going to see this through basketball games, all that. But no, to your point, if you don't win the ring, didn't mean a thing.
Exactly. And that's what the Bulls' mentality was. And unfortunately, the Warriors weren't able to seal the deal. Let's wrap this thing up. For our first story, we covered the lost NBA, primarily the 1993-94 season, when Michael Jordan retired and Scottie Pippen led the Bulls.
For our second story, we covered episode 7 of The Last Dance, which essentially was Michael's baseball career and his return to basketball. And essentially, if there wasn't the work stoppage, MJ would probably play baseball and we may not have had that second three-peat.
And for our third story, we covered episode 8 of The Last Dance and how Space Jam, yes, Space Jam in the Dome, the Bulls Dome, won them their fourth NBA championship. Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time, peace.